Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight, number 530 for comics originally released on October 4th, 2017. Now, starting us off in DC is All-Star Batman number 14. And I'll be honest, Drew, I was surprised this was the final issue of the series. If you had not mentioned that, I probably would have been a month from now waiting for number 15 and wondering what happened. It's hard to keep track of all the different titles these days.
It certainly is. They come and they go, and you just never know sometimes.
This is the first Ally storyline, and I will be honest, when this started up, I had a little trepidation about it in terms of, is that really kind of, you know... Alfred is the first Ally makes sense. I mean, it was a little too on the nose, so I never considered that's who they were going to have be that first Ally. But the direction they went with Alfred in this, it really didn't sit well with me, because it essentially sets him up as almost like a precursor to Batman in all but costume. You know, special agent of the government, all the super spy skills. I mean, it made it to where it's not just that he trained Batman, but a generation earlier, he would have been Batman. And I don't know, there's a certain aspect of Alfred, just an actor, training Batman, or getting it to where he acts like how a Batman would act, and therefore he kind of becomes a Batman, almost a method acting on an extreme basis, if you will, that for me plays a little bit better than the, what are the odds that the perfect guy to train Batman just happens to luck into, you know, being the son of the butler for the Waynes who dies right at the right time, and, you know, all of this kind of aligning of stars sort of a thing. But that having been said, if you're okay with that basic concept or whatever, it was a decent story. Now, as I'm sure will come as to no surprise to you, the constant jumping between the now and then drove me up the wall. And there were a couple of times they would cut away from, like, the now right before a key thing happened, like, I don't know, a plane getting shot down. It's like, okay, we see Alfred with the gun. Great, got it. But would it hurt for you to actually show us the plane getting shot down before, when we jump back to the now, there's a plane crash, Alfred's bailing out? I mean, it's like, you cut away from, I thought, a key moment. So there was a little annoyance there. But, I mean, it's a good telling... Well, I was going to say it's a good telling of a questionable story, but I questioned the telling, too. I liked it. I enjoyed it. But I had some major misgivings about the nature of the story they were telling and one or two of the dangling plot threads they had here. And there was one in particular that doesn't feel like the sort of thing that, had I been the editor, I would have said, okay, yeah, go ahead and do that. Unless there was a game plan and this was building something for the future and it was just going to have an amazing payoff. But we'll see if that happens or not.
Yeah, I think I think Scott Snyder has a real affection for all things Batman and all supporting characters, and he likes to explore them in ways that maybe others haven't explored them. And I think it comes from a place of affection, and he really likes them. But yeah, sometimes it's do I really need to see this aspect? And it does kind of lose the charm of Alfred as just the caretaker that loves a young Bruce Wayne and keeps him safe all those years and then stitches them up when he gets hurt. And it kind of loses its effectiveness when you think, you know, that he's this superior crime fighter in his own right, almost. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it does lose a little bit. I can definitely see that. I like the story, though. I mean, if I can just pretend it's an Elseworld story, you know, and that this is just a...
Kind of like the Earth One, in which Alfred is, you know, an ex-mercenary or whatever.
Yeah.
Who just happens to stumble across Bruce at the right time, yada yada.
If I can just put those goggles on and not make it canon and feel like it has to fit in this box, then I think I enjoy it a little bit more. I don't know if that's even possible, but that's kind of how I have to look at some of these things and just look at them that way. Cause I think the art was really nice and it was a nice style that I enjoyed. And, this series has been good and something that I've enjoyed the main story of the A plot, the A story throughout, and kind of maybe those extra pages at the end have not been, valuable to me as a reader. Albuquerque's been, I think, writing the backups for a while now, and those have been kind of worthless, but I did like this story.
Well, the backup in this particular issue finally concluded that arc. Now, granted, they've only got, you know, a handful of pages to play with here, maybe 7 or 8 or whatever, but it ending on a note that I guess set up the beginning of the main story that came out, what, back in May or something? I mean, if that's not a sign that this was written for the trade reader, I don't know what is. I mean, a 6-month slow burn on a backup feature that then calls back to the beginning of the main 6-issue arc, you know, way back when or whatever. I mean, I don't know. That,
Yeah, I didn't even pick up on that. I had actually stopped reading the backup in this. I've been reading the series without reading the backup. So I didn't even know that's what they were going for.
That's what seemed to be happening, but I wasn't overly amazed by the backup because it was an early Batman who was constantly saying how he'd kind of, whoop, didn't catch that. Oops, didn't catch that. Oops, I shouldn't have done that. You know, almost that's not the Batman I want. I'm not saying it's not a valid take for an early Batman. Likewise, I'm not saying this isn't a valid take for Alfred or whatever, but as far as I know, all of this is taking place in the mainstream DC universe, and it's a little hard to kind of accept that and fit that in with, you know, kind of my take on Batman and Alfred and so forth. And the fact that I do believe this is in the mainstream universe, and there is, again, this one major tangling loose end that they're in my mind, a damned if they do, damned if they don't situation. If they don't do anything with this plot thread, it's like, well, what was the whole point? You go through a lot of trouble to set something up, and if it doesn't pay off, why bother? But then if it does, it's like, really, you wanted to hang on to that? Because I thought it was ill-conceived, more so than even the basic nature of the story. It again, boggled my mind. Again, were I the editor, it's like, no, that's a bad idea just long-term. For the continuity and stuff, it would have to get disavowed, have to do this, whatever. I could see maybe going for it if there's like a brilliant payoff, but I don't see that coming. Certainly not in this title, since this title's ending.
Are you talking about the villain that walks off?
Yes, the villain that walks off at the end.
And is still around and conceivably can resurface at any point.
I feel that character is obligated to resurface. I mean, why set the character up?
And then we have to revisit it again.
Which, again,
yeah.
The character, I think, while potentially interesting, was ill-conceived just from a larger shared universe picture. There are certain stories that, while they may be fun to tell...
And we think this is a spoiler because we think people haven't read this book yet. Because it's a trade book. Because people are waiting for the trade.
Well, because I think it's certainly written for the trade.
Okay.
I don't want to give it away in case somebody hasn't read this. I'm sensing you feel differently on that.
Well, no, I don't care. I don't care either way. I don't feel strongly either way. So we'll go your way.
If they haven't encountered this, and it may be a while before that character shows up again, I will spare the listeners what I consider the pain of it.
Exactly.
It's something that once out there is hard to, you can't unroll the die, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I was really surprised because Scott Snyder is usually pretty good with putting the toys back in the box. And this one, he's kind of let out and away it goes. And now that I say that, though, he did create Duke, too, didn't he? The new Robin. Wasn't that a Scott Snyder invention?
Might be. I'd have to chase back to when Duke first appeared. Yeah. I think so.
Which also is problematic.
I couldn't tell if it was that in Batman or was that We Are Robin where Duke first appeared?
Yeah, I don't know. I couldn't swear to it. But also problematic because there's way too many Robins kicking around. But
yeah,
that's a different story, a different problem for a different book. This book has another character that's going to be problematic and probably should have died on the last page and not walked off.
I would have been more extreme. I would not have had the character die. I would have the character not have been.
That was part of his plot. So yeah, but it could have been wrapped up by being destroyed.
True, but I think even having it part of the plot to me detracted from this. And it's funny because I come to him really hard against aspects of the storytelling, aspects of certainly the nature of the plot, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good read, despite the fact they went in directions I think were ill-advised. You know, I'm not necessarily going to be sorry to see this title go. I think we've got plenty of Batman books, but this was a fun read of, again, like I said, what I consider to be an ill-conceived story. And not necessarily ill-conceived on the creator's part. I can see them wanting to tell this story, but for a character as tenured as Batman, and really you can't get much further back than that, except maybe Superman and a handful of others, if that, there's certain things where it's like, if you put this into the canon, at some point it's got to be, again, like disavowed, ignored, and fade away or whatever, because it doesn't work long-term. But short-term, it's fun. So I'm going to go with a B+ on this, surprisingly.
Yeah, I'm at a B-. I did think the story was pretty good, the A story. I thought it was a throwaway supporting story, I felt, again. It's a $5 book. It's unnecessarily to be that much. And but yeah, good, decent art, decent story. Yeah, I kind of wish you would have buttoned it up a little better. But yeah, I thought it was worth a read.
Mm-hmm. The price is a major negative. I will certainly concede that. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah.
This is Avengers number 672. This is part of the Marvel Legacy numbering. And it is a crossover between the Avengers and the Champions. And the cover is one of those iconic images from a classic, I'm going to say, JLA-JSA crossover or maybe a Crisis. And I feel it was like the Spectre holding the two worlds apart or something. For the life of me, I couldn't find exactly where the image was, what it was an homage to. Of course, I didn't spend a whole lot of time looking. And it may not have been another cover. It may have been interior art, but it was very much setting the story off on a JLA-JSA kind of a vibe, which I thought was completely appropriate given the Avengers Champions kind of a crossover of the older guard and the younger characters. In some cases, almost analog characters in some degrees. Not as much as, say, a JLA-JSA crossover would be. But, you know, with Wade writing, I don't think any of that was the least bit accidental. He's just a very seasoned writer, both at Marvel and at DC. And he hit kind of all the right notes for the start of a six-part crossover between the two titles. And I don't know what the heck was going on that first page, but I'm willing to bet that, you know, we'll find out through the course of the adventure, and I'm fine with that. And we got a lot of really good character moments and a couple of things that just surprised me very pleasantly, like when Herc and the Totally Awesome Hulk are told, okay, you guys team up and deal with this part over here. Because it was, again, classic JLA-JSA sort of storytelling of take the team, divide them up, and go have little mini adventures or whatever. When you get Herc and Hulk together, Herc's like, you know, hey, I'm not really used to you as a Hulk, Amadeus, but, you know, it's just like old times, buddy. Because Herc had taken over the Hulk title at one point, and Amadeus was essentially his sidekick. And that kind of a callback, it's like, oh yeah, I'd forgotten about that, because they hadn't really referenced it for a while. Those sorts of callbacks, that sort of use of the continuity, the history, the baggage of the characters in a good way, made for this, I thought it was a really fun read. There was kind of the expected and appropriate friction between the Avengers and the Champions, and it just, the writing, I thought, was sensational, and the art was phenomenal. I thought overall the art was outstanding. The only kind of nitpick I would have, and it was mainly there at the beginning, when we first see the Champions at their Texas headquarters, Sam Nova seems a bit older than he's usually shown in either his own title or Champions or pretty much anywhere else we've ever seen him, by a couple of years. And for a kid who's supposed to be a really scrawny, 10-year-old or some such, he was coming across a bit more like a teenager here, but a really well-drawn one. So I'm not going to complain, it just, that was the only thing I could say would be a possible knock on the art. Otherwise, it was just sensational and just a joy to look at.
I had a little more trouble with the art than you did. I think, and I was really surprised because Mark Wade, I think, is writing the Champions too, and writing them very well, and they're being drawn age appropriately. And I felt the entire team was way too old, drawn way too old, especially Scott Summers. Got him wrong, got Ms. Marvel wrong. And that, yeah, I was really surprised that, I mean, they all look like their contemporaries. The entire Avengers and Champions are drawn similar in age. And that's just not the way to do it. And it should have been those early, when they did the first early team page where it shows who the Champions are and who the Avengers are, you should have just said, okay, wrong, try again, and send it back. But that being said, I was able to move on and enjoy the story for what it was, which was a fun story. Really, really cool to set up what this crossover is going to be. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. It was a fun little let's stop the meteor story, and it was cool to see the different team ups and how they attacked the thing. And I mean, it should have been an easier fix than it was. I thought. I mean, I would have assumed that on a, like, any one of these couple of characters could have probably stopped that thing in their own books.
Well, only under one condition, and that is it happened in their own title.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it would have been a much easier, but it wouldn't have taken 12 characters to slow this thing down to a crawl by the time it landed on the ground. But it was still fun, and it was cool to have them all interact that way. And it seems to me like it's going to be a fun little crossover. Won't take too long, hopefully. Won't have too many extra issues, and we'll just get through it lickety split, and a nice 6-issue crossover that gets collected to trade. And I think it'll be fun. So I'm looking forward to reading some more.
Your point that they could take out the meteor individually, well taken. I can think of a couple of ways how almost every one of them could do it, except maybe Falcon. I think he'd be the one hardest up. But I'm thinking there's something almost interdimensionally going on here that is messing with them a little bit. The whole bit about the Counter-Earth, I thought, well, that was a lot of fun. I want to see where they go with it. And Mark Waid, who, again, is so steeped in the backstory of the Marvel Universe, I think it'll have a good payoff. And I'm, again, fascinated to know where it goes. I do not expect to be disappointed here. The one concern I have about this in terms of how it gets collected in trade is it going to be jarring between the chapters with the different artists? Because I think this is a fairly realistic style, whereas I think the Champions tends to be a little bit more of a cartoony style.
Yeah, and the Champions are going to be, they're going to be 5 to 10 years younger than in that book than they are in this one.
With the exception of Sam, I didn't think it was that bad. I see particularly what you mean with Cyclops. He feels a bit taller and stuff than I feel he is usually in his own book. But
Ms. Marvel looks to be as old. She looks like J-Lo. I mean, she looks old in some of these panels. I think Viv looks like her mom from the Vision miniseries in a lot of these panels. It's just,
they're certainly skewing older. I don't know if I'd agree as old as you do, but the point is, when you flip the page in the trade and you get to the Champions one,
you're going to notice.
Oh yeah, you're absolutely going to notice. They're going to feel much, much younger. So I'm curious how that's going to work. It'll be quite a while before we find out, I bet. But I'm really enjoying this. I thought it was a fun crossover, and it was evocative of the JLA-JSA crossovers, which I just historically have really enjoyed. It hit all kind of the right notes of similar teams that are, you know, friendly with each other, but there's some friction there. They shouldn't work together day in, day out, because it just wouldn't work. They're too similar and too different in some respects. They captured that kind of aspect, and they were all heroic the whole time and stuff. I don't know. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, because these things can get really clunky and crowded. I didn't feel that way at all. I thought this really worked, and everybody got their chance to shine and interact, and no one really got pushed aside. So I was really surprised with such a large cast that it was able to work as well as it did.
I attribute some of that to the classic JLA-JSA storytelling style of split them into groups of two, three, or four or something and have a bunch of those to cut against. You know, hey, let's go look at these for a little bit. Okay, they've interacted. Now let's cut over to this other thing so that them interact. It guarantees everybody has a chance to shine versus being one of the dozen or so heroes in that panel.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we'll know pretty soon. As soon as we see the next issue of Champions, we'll see Umberto Ramos's art style again. And if unless he's changed it, I think it will be a jarring. We'll notice that jarring art difference. Because of the stylistically and the way the age they're drawn. So yeah, I think we'll know pretty soon. We might not know in totality by the time the trade comes out, but I think we'll know pretty soon how they're going to work together.
Yeah. And Umberto Ramos, I think, is a great pick for a book like The Champions that has predominantly younger characters. He did great on Impulse and a number of other titles over the years. And he can draw the young characters both in terms of making them look young, but the body language that goes with that. Whereas this is, again, a crisper, I don't want to say photorealistic, but it looks heavily 3D sourced.
Yeah.
And I just put that on almost the polar end, opposite end of the spectrum as Umberto Ramos. Both are really good and I really enjoy what they do. But man, if I were to flip the page in a trade and go from one style to the other in either direction, there's a little bit of cognitive dissonance that would just kind of, you know, pop out at that point of, whoa, that's different.
Yeah. I mean, it bothered me for a little bit. I was able to push that art, choice to the side a little bit. I really, really enjoyed this. I gave it an A-, and it would have been an A had they been a little closer to the Champions age that I felt they should be. But this was fun. It was a really good start to a series and a crossover, and I'm excited for the rest of the crossover. I think they did a great job.
For me, I didn't think the art was that off, with the exception of Sam, who seemed about 6 inches to a foot taller than it should be. Although, again, to your point, now that I look at it, arguably the same could be said of Cyclops. I really love the art style. Again, the storytelling. I'm going with a solid A. I don't think people would be disappointed if they're fans of one or both of these titles. Do the characters look the way you think they should as the potential caveat.
We both liked it.
Yeah. I'm expecting it'll turn out well. I think Wade is the right kind of a writer to do this. He's good on plot. He's good on characterization. He knows these characters inside and out. I'm looking forward to the rest of the storyline.
He's an up-and-comer. Keep your eye out for this Mark Wade guy.
and he's been one of those up-and-comers for many, many years. But yeah, it's nice to see that he's able to stay contemporary with the style of the time.
Yeah.
Because again, he's been doing this for a surprisingly long time, given how youthful he is.
Well, yeah. And over in the Champions book, he writes them and it feels authentic to me. I mean, I'm an old white guy, but they're youthful, conversation sounds authentic to me from, and so I think he does a good job of capturing that when that could really fall false and not work.
Well, you compare it to the 60s Titans, which are hip, groovy, and all wrong with the lingo, I would imagine. Because it was written by old white guys trying to do the hip, cool teenager slang.
Yeah.
And Mark Wade, I think, is a really good listener and observer of humanity because he's done a variety of different characters, I think, really well. But I think also one of the things that suits him well with the Champions, he's never really lost touch, I think, with his inner child. I mean, he's grown, he's matured, he's a really great guy. The couple of times I've interacted with him, I found him very, very nice. And again, his trivia knowledge is just insane. But he has hung on to the joy of, you know, he gets to write comics for a living. That is not lost on him. And just the coolness of that. That's the sort of thing I think really shines through in the way he captures the exuberance and innocence and the other youthful aspects of characters like the Champions. So, again, highly recommended pretty much anything he writes by and large, but certainly this in particular.
Yep.
Shall we move on to our other book?
Yes.
This is Slots number 1. It is from Image Comics, and this was not something I pre-ordered. I'll be honest, it barely even hit my radar during the solicit cycle. And had you not mentioned, hey, we should consider doing this, it probably still wouldn't have been on my radar at all.
That's not the first time that's happened.
No, it is not. It is not.
And vice versa.
You know, Image is good about having the press PDFs available. I appreciate that. That was certainly how I was able to read this. And I'll be honest, I went in thinking this would be probably an okay book, but just not really kind of in my wheelhouse, up my alley, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, it's like, I'll give it a shot. You know, Image tends to do a lot more of what I would consider almost a slice of life or more a general kind of a story than, you know, superhero or sci-fi. They do some of that too, but they do a lot more stuff outside of those genres than, frankly, I tend to pick up and read. So I didn't go in with this with major expectations. But you know what? Turns out this was a really well-done book. And while the story wasn't exactly up my alley, it was close enough that I would give some serious thought as to picking this up. Now, I'm still behind on my reading. I still have a fairly full pull list, so it's no guarantee it'll get on my list. But certainly, if it was something where I had some openings and was looking for something, this would have gotten right on it. I thought the lead character was well established, particularly through actions, not exposition. I thought the basic situation he was in was clearly set up. The backstory of the character just continued to reveal itself through the course of the story in what felt like a very natural manner. Not like it's like, oh, geez, here's the info dump they're going to give us. We get the so-and-so who knows him through whatever, and they're going to have to give us the life history of this character and heavy exposition. None of that. It was just something that just things kept popping out, and it's like, you know, they went kind of where I felt they were going, but I didn't see it coming. It's a very tricky blend to foreshadow without telegraphing. And I felt the art and the story were perfectly in sync, which is unsurprising because the writer is also the artist. And that really helps have a unified vision and such. So all in all, I was pleasantly surprised by this. And I think it's quality stuff. Now, whether it's something somebody's interested in reading or not, it depends what their interests are in terms of genre, story, and stuff like that. But certainly I can't give this any marks down in terms of quality or the execution on the idea. I thought they did a really good job.
Yeah, those first four or five pages really set the tone on who this guy is. And I really love the use of the extra sets of keys that he's used all along this cross-country trip. Or maybe his whole life. He's had a glove box full of key rings that he uses to con people out of the check and dine and dash across the country. And that was really a fun way to tell who this guy is and something I hadn't ever seen before. I really liked that. I think it is definitely a passion project for this guy who's doing, you know, the writing and the art, and, you know, this is his baby. So he definitely knows this inside and out. I'm curious as to what this is. We've got, you know, an estranged girlfriend and her daughter who also has an interesting career choice. And then his estranged son pops back in, and we've got, you know, just a bunch of stuff going on. And I'm curious as to what's going to be the driving force going forward in this story and how much we're going to get. Because we can't just focus on the short con for now. We've got some other things to do and some other characters to explore. So I'm kind of curious about that. I don't know that it was well established enough in this first issue to know what the direction is, but it sure was fun to get there and kind of get everybody introduced. And I'm curious. I'm curious. I want to know more.
I agree that the plot trajectory is a little ambiguous, but I don't think this is a plot focused narrative. This is one where it's about the character and what happens to him. So, I mean, there's some books where it's like, well, the aliens are coming and we must fight the aliens, or, you know, whatever the big, you know, conflict is going to be. There are others where it's just, here's a guy, here's his status quo, he's got a couple of things he's got to deal with. Isn't he kind of cool to watch deal with that stuff? This is in that vein, I think.
And we think it's called Slots because it's set in Las Vegas?
That's my supposition. I don't know why else they would call it slots. It seems reasonable.
Yeah. It just seems like there would, I don't know. So meeting him and he's got interesting backstory. It doesn't seem to be gambling related much, but
I think maybe it is. Just not in terms of slot machines and roulette wheels.
Yeah.
He certainly seems to gamble a lot on just the way he lives his life. I mean, con artist, etc.
Yeah. Okay. I guess I can see that connection. I don't like the title. I don't think the title helps sell the book.
What would you have called it?
I don't know, Stanley Dance, maybe.
I don't know that that would have sold me any more or less.
Yeah.
Part of what impressed me with this is over the course of this issue, it's got like four chapters in it. We get a bunch of different characters. A lot happens in this. I would argue almost more than a six-issue arc, maybe a year's worth of some other titles in the past that were insanely decompressed. Yet it never felt rushed, too busy, or anything of the sort. I never felt overloaded with information, but, you know, you get to the end of it and you realize, wow, they've done quite a bit. So I think a little bit better pitch on this, possibly a different title, although I don't know what title would have been better. I don't think Slots is particularly bad, but it's also not something that there's a clear, okay, I get it now. This is why it's called Slots. Maybe in the course of the first arc, we'll get that.
Yeah. Maybe it is his gambling attitude, I guess. Maybe that's what they were trying to evoke. I just didn't get a sense for what they were going for with that. And I do not have a better replacement at the time. So
Would have gone with like a chance or something of that sort.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I guess it, depending on what the direction of the story is, would have helped you title it, but then you might forecast where you're going with the story. Don't want to do that either.
Or it becomes clear why they told it and it wasn't forecast by the title.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yeah. I don't know. It's too early to tell.
Yeah, we'll see. I like the art style a lot. I like his art. I like the story he's telling. All the characters are interesting. I'm curious as to where it's going to go. And I want to see more. So another A- for me.
I'm going to go with another A. This worked surprisingly well for me. There are a couple of things in here that in other books were really turnoffs for me. I mean, there's some profanity, stuff like that. But it didn't feel gratuitous. It wasn't something they were making a big deal on. And just the amount of story and how sucked into the story I got really impressed me. So solid A on this. I think it's definitely worth checking out. As I said, I'm considering, do I add it to my reading list or not? But I've got a pretty full reading list as it is, so I'm not sure. And speaking of that fairly full reading list, I've gotten, I think, another 106 or so comics read since we last recorded. So I'm back down to, aside from the stuff that came this week, a single short box worth of comics. I think I'm at about 128 to read, a few of which are going to be a little bit tricky to catch up on. Because I seem to have neglected to order a few things I need to, so I've got a couple of gaps that I need to fill before I can get all of it read. So I'll probably be making a purchase through my at mycomicshop.com in the not-too-distant future. But it's been a lot of good stuff coming out. A couple of things that were better than others, but, you know, that happens. I'm trying to think if there was anything that was just, oh my god, amazing. Other than what we've just kind of talked about, because I thought there was some really good stuff this time around. Caught up on Miraculous, Dying in the Dead, a lot of the Doctor Who stuff, including they've gotten into that crossover between the Doctors, and I'm really enjoying that, but it's also kind of cementing my opinion that I like the Doctor stories when they do stuff like that more than just a run-of-the-mill Doctor story in comic format. I mean, I like them fine on TV, but you know what I mean? It's almost like I want the event stories in the Doctor Who universe versus just the other ones.
Yeah, I get you.
Finished off the Nancy Drew Hardy Boys stuff. Enjoyed it. If and when they do another one, don't know if I'll come back. Sword Quest, really enjoyed. That's working for me very well, more so than I would have expected.
You're not normally a sword and sorcery guy, are you?
You have not read that book, have you?
No.
There is allusions to sword and sorcery, but it's very much set in the real world.
Oh, cool.
And there's aspects of is it a game? Is there a reality behind it? Or that sort of a thing that's kind of cool. They hit the nostalgia buttons in a very cool way while telling, again, a contemporary story. I'm trying to think what else is worth talking about. Another Mark Waid book, Archie, caught up on that. All the stuff going on with Betty and stuff. I almost want to accuse Waid of cheap ploys to tug at the heartstrings, but damn, it worked.
Oh, yeah.
Master writer. You would think after 50, 75 years, however long the Archie stuff's been going, that they'd be kind of out of new stories or whatnot, and absolutely not.
I would be very surprised if that storyline does not get pulled into Riverdale season 3 or 4.
Yeah, I could see that. It's one of those things when they rebooted the Archie stuff with Mark Waid, it's like, I'll give it a shot. I'll see if it's any good. I'm curious. Been hooked.
Yeah. Still hooked.
Phasing out of the other titles in it, just because they're not coming out as often, like Jughead and some of the others.
I dropped them all.
But the main one with Waid, I'm really enjoying. So we've got the teleconference coming up. Probably so soon that by the time this goes up, it will have happened. Yeah, because it'll be on the 14th. This episode doesn't go up to the 16th. And then previews, the next one should come out on the 25th of October. That means the preview spotlight clips will be due on November 4th, that Saturday morning, bright and early. And then the following Saturday, November 11th, is when we're going to do the next previews teleconference, or just comic page teleconference. It's really, we talk just about whatever. We've veered quite a bit away from talking about just the preview stuff, which I think is cool because we cover a lot of different grounds and stuff. There are going to be a little bit of a delay getting the Mayo Report episodes up just because of some scheduling issues on my end. I've got a few other things that mean we probably won't record that until later in the month, but I'll get those up hopefully before the next set of numbers come out. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
Hey, I think that does it.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Gotham City Garage number 1 from DC, Falcon number 1 from Marvel, and Fighting American number 1 from Titan Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.